This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's not just Republicans from around the country who are on their way to Philadelphia, which will host the GOP convention next week. Protesters from around the country are coming too. Many of them are part of the coalition of groups that demonstrated in Seattle last December during the meeting of the World Trade Organization. About 30,000 people demonstrated in Seattle. Those demonstrations were largely peaceful, but they stopped traffic and delayed meetings. A small group of protesters, estimated at 100 or 200 people, smashed the windows of some businesses. Police used tear gas and arrested about 600 demonstrators in Seattle. The National Guard was called in. The city of Philadelphia has tried to restrict protests to an area around the convention center. However, one group sued and won the right to stage their demonstration in the central part of the city. Another coalition is planning to demonstrate without a permit. Later, we'll meet two of the protest organizers. My guest, Thomas Ginsburg, is a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's been covering the planning of the protests as well as the city and police department's security plans. I asked Ginsburg to describe the range of groups expected to participate in the demonstrations.
There's a really wide range of groups, and it's somewhat like it has been at all conventions. There are pro-life groups and pro-choice and gun groups on both sides. Those are probably the same numbers they were at past conventions. The difference this time, as far as we can tell, is a large number of people who haven't previously taken part in conventions, at least since 68 and 72, people who have really been energized by what happened in Seattle in November and in Washington last April, people who are generally very critical of undemocratic tendencies, they say, in the globalization trend in IMF and the World Bank and so forth. They have put together various coalitions to put on large protests here. Only a couple of those have actually gotten permits to have protests. So that has caused some tension with the city. The rest of them are going to go ahead and protest anyway. It'll be a big mixture of things.
What are some of the concerns that the city of Philadelphia has after what happened in Seattle?
Well, the city was preparing for protests before Seattle, but afterwards, Philadelphia, like most large cities all over the country, became very concerned about what happened in Seattle, whole blocks taken over and buildings smashed and windows smashed. They reacted then in particular, and also like Los Angeles did, by bringing in specialists to train them on crowd control. The FBI came in and did special trainings and briefings on intelligence that they had. A lot of this targeting groups that had been in Seattle, not necessarily involved in the violence. So to some extent, it was a very harsh reaction, defensible or not. That is what they've done. And since then, they've moved to do, they've done trainings of police officers here in special crowd control. They've gotten new equipment. They have passed a city ordinance. They had gotten a mask ordinance in Philadelphia, which several other cities also have and has been upheld as legal, but Philadelphia didn't have one and now it does, where you're not allowed to wear a mask in the commission of a crime.
So how does that ordinance pertain to demonstrations?
Well, there was some sightings of anarchists, mainly anarchists in Seattle, who were involved in some of the direct action there, who were accused of being the ones breaking windows. And I guess people believe the wearing of masks during some of that was allowed them to do it or to hide their identity. It's a reaction mainly against anything they can't get their handle on and don't really know how to control. I'm not sure that anyone thinks that this mask ordinance is going to really do anything to control anything in Philadelphia. But it's one more sign of what they've tried to do.
What have you been able to find out about police surveillance of the groups intending to protest during the convention?
Well, a lot of what's been going on, again, in Philadelphia and all over the country is intelligence gathering after Seattle and people trying to, law enforcement trying to find out who's doing what and planning what. In Philadelphia, the police department here has a long history of doing surveillance of protest groups of activists. This is not something new. When it began However, the police department completely denied that it was doing it. In fact, said that we can't do it because we've been forbidden by a consent decree from 1987 to do it, which left everyone scratching their heads and some people still accusing the police. The fact that later the police last week admitted that it was their people doing surveillance is yet another sign that, that the it seems to me that the police and the city officials are trying to be really tough and at the same time not really knowing how to present themselves as a city of brotherly love and free liberty here. The surveillance, as far as we know, has been mainly from outside buildings during meetings to photograph or watch people coming in and out of meetings. We don't know for certain of anything more than that. The 1987 decree actually applied only to infiltration and the bugging of offices, and we don't know that that's happening.
You reported on a police tip sheet about a month ago. What was that tip sheet? Who wrote it? Who was it sent to? What was it about?
Another something that the police haven't entirely fessed up to, but it is a tip sheet that was put together through police sources, at least, that listed everything that any law enforcement or security agency, private security agency, should look for during the protest. It included things like look for the theft of chains or PVC piping, which is construction piping that can be used to make barricades. Look for any large increase of strangers in a neighborhood, and particularly look for an increase in the number of white male and female youths with colorful hair and body piercings as a sign of activists moving in and getting ready to do something. It was a quite interesting remark in this tip sheet, not only because it's a very sensitive sort of generalization to make, but the protesters themselves have been very sensitive to the fact that in Seattle, certainly, a lot of their the protests involve a lot of whites instead of people of color and minorities. And there's been a lot of discussion in their planning groups how to bring more minority groups into the protests. And they emphasize a lot how there are a lot of particularly African-American groups that are affected by government policies that don't take part in these street actions. And we should remember them. However, if you go to any of their meetings, it is 95% young white people. So they do have a situation here, and the police have recognized it.
What are some of the restrictions that the city of Philadelphia has put around protests, where you can protest?
The city tried to do, or did actually, what most cities have done for conventions for the last 12 years at least. Established a special zone near the convention site where they set up a lottery system where people can pick and choose a number and have a time slot to protest within sight of the convention. And it's a legal area where they can control it, and it's corralled, and they build a fence for them, and they set up a sound system, and they do all this this preparation. And it's initially meant to give a place for activists to make their message known without disrupting the going on of the convention. The problem is that in almost every city where it's been done, it's been challenged legally, or it's been challenged at least politically in the city as an unfair attempt to corral people. You can't put free speech in a box, so to speak. And at every convention, it's also been upheld as legal in the courts. And just last week, a federal judge in Los Angeles, on a case that had been brought by the ACLU out there, ruled that the placement of the free speech zone near the Staples Center in Los Angeles was unconstitutional because it was out of line of sight of the convention site. It didn't rule against the zone itself, just the placement. Philadelphia had a different kind of legal challenge where the zone here was never a point of contention because none of the activists here wanted to use it. They basically ignored it. They scorned it. They didn't want to have any part with it. They wanted to have a protest right in the middle of town, and the city refused initially. Told them to go to the protest site. They said no. They ended up suing, also with the help of the ACLU, under abridgment of First Amendment freedoms, and won a settlement, basically, and got their permit. As a result of that fight in Philadelphia, there are two permitted rallies, two major permitted rallies, one both before the convention, one on Sunday, just before, and one on Saturday. There have been, as of this point, as far as we can tell, no permits for major demonstrations, street demonstrations, during the convention itself outside this protest zone. And the city is pretty much sticking to that.
But there are major demonstrations that are planned in spite of the city's restrictions.
Oh, and there's a lot of that. Now, there's going to be probably three days of unauthorized, unpermitted protests, and they've given a theme for each day. A lot of the planning for this also involves arrests, and to some extent, arrests are the very point of the protest, to get arrested, to make a point. That's what civil disobedience is intended to do. There will be various kinds of direct action where surprise banners being raised on high-rises or wherever it might be, or people suddenly locking themselves to a shuttle bus where delegates are supposed to use to get to their restaurant or something. There'll be things like that. They haven't, of course, told me all their details, and I don't think they want to tell anyone. That's the point, but they want to be secret, and a lot of these people are veterans of Seattle and Washington, and they've learned their lessons from there, just as the police have learned from watching Seattle and Washington. And it looks like the city will turn into a kind of running daily game of cat and mouse, as far as I can tell, where you will have smaller groups of protesters, they call affinity groups, attempting direct action or attempting to block a street, dashing from one place to another, and police in what they call mobile field forces, where they will be in probably unmarked cars, dashing from place to place to catch the activists to try to keep the streets open. It'll be a dramatic few days anyway.
Since some of these protests involve civil disobedience and a lot of people are planning on getting arrested, what kind of plans has the city of Philadelphia made to accommodate the people who they arrest?
This has been has recently become a point of contention. The city didn't really have a very good facility to put a lot of protesters. It had to look for detention centers, and it looked for them in areas that would be far from Center City, where people who are detained, if they are released, can't easily get back to the action. So they have settled on Holmesburg Prison, which has been closed, which was closed for being a dungeon-like place, and they are trying to bring it back up to a facility where they can safely keep people. There is also going to be federal facilities, apparently going to be one at a naval supply center, where they will be processing people. In the technicalities of this, if someone is arrested on federal property versus state or city property, they have to be processed differently. So that's why that's happening.
My guest is Thomas Ginsberg, a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Thomas Ginsberg. He's a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's one of a group of reporters who have been covering plans for the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia. And Thomas Ginsberg is focusing on protests and security plans. What kind of pressures are on the Philadelphia police now to make sure that there isn't violence in the streets, that businesses are protected if there are attempts to smash windows or do any actions that would directly affect the businesses? After all, it's the businesses who were just dying to get the convention here, yeah, thinking how good it was going to be for business.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem the city has found itself in. And from what I can tell, one that it didn't expect. Philadelphia is, of course, a historic city and the cradle of liberty, and we're the Liberty Bell and all that the Republicans would like to glom onto. And the city would like to promote that image as being welcoming and being fair and open. And it seems to me that this impulse has really come into conflict with its concurrent need to provide a lot of security and a very smooth running convention, so that the city's convention and tourism business, which has become the base, or at least what some officials would like to be the base of the economy here, will really grow as a result of this convention, and that people will see it as a stable, safe, prosperous city to work in. And in some instances, these two goals cross. It's really a security continuum in a way, the crossing of safety with liberties. You if you leave everything wide open, it's not going to be very safe, and vice versa. So in statements made by the past the Rendell administration and by the current Street administration here, you find them very often on both sides of this question, and those two things come into conflict. And we saw about a week ago when building inspectors shut down quite summarily and in apparently without much oversight from the higher-ups in the administration, shut down a studio where protesters were making puppets and floats for the convention, for their protest for the convention. Within hours of that, the Street administration intervened and had the studio reopened. And they acknowledged very clearly, it makes us look bad. We can't do this.
Have you talked to anybody from the FBI at all? Do you know if the FBI is in on the security planning?
Oh, FBI, ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Secret Service is the lead coordinator for the whole thing. The Capitol Police from Washington will be here with every congressman and senator. A state police contingent from every state that is sending a governor, and that's 35 Republican governors. That's a lot of state police. There are dozens of law enforcement agencies that will be here. The FBI's role is going to be a little unique here because Philadelphia does have a lot of federal property, and they formally have responsibility for law enforcement on federal property, whereas everything else will largely be left to the police, at least initially. The FBI is on top of that, contributing a lot of intelligence gathering and technical resources. They will apparently be bringing an entire electronic command center that will be connected directly with their facilities in Virginia to do very instant background checks and intelligence gathering on people that they may come across.
One of the unique things about the new wave of protests, the anti-corporate protests that we've been seeing since Seattle, is that these groups are really organized through the internet, and that there's just a lot of disparate groups who can interconnect around common causes through the internet. That means that other people can tap into the communications on the internet too. Do you know if the police have been using the internet to study up on the protest groups?
Oh, absolutely. The internet has been a fantastic way to cover what's been going on and to see by reporters and by law enforcement. There are dozens of listservs, which are email networks that are like giant bulletin boards, basically, and you put one message out there and it goes to hundreds of people who are subscribed to that listserv, and police can easily subscribe law enforcement, and they do. They've told me they do. They read them all the time, just like I do, just like a lot of other reporters do. You can get a lot of information about what people are thinking, what they'd like to do. But it is only information. It doesn't mean that it's good or accurate. And this is one way very helpful to reporting, and I imagine to law enforcement. In another way, a bit frustrating, because everything has to be run down and checked. And I personally, professionally, have a rule that I don't report things that I've seen on the internet unless I've checked them out directly. Either with the person or the group, or to put it in perspective, it can be very dicey. It can be basically a very profitable tip sheet. Let's put it that way.
Do you think, because of all these concerns about security now surrounding the Republican National Convention, do you think that there's going to be a diminished desire in the future for cities to attract the convention? I mean, cities have competed so hard to get the convention in their hometown, hoping it would generate good publicity, hoping it would generate a lot of profits for businesses and hotels. And now with the protests and the security plans and the anti-corporate politics behind the protests, I'm not sure it's the businesses are going to be too excited to have major events like this in their backyard anymore.
I don't. That's a foreseeing of the future that I can't do that. I guess we'll have to wait and see what cities do. I can't imagine that no matter how many demonstrators take to a street, that a business is going to say they don't like the business. I mean, protesters are going to bring business here too. One of them just told me, well, we'll buy lots of pizza. That accounts for business. I think the factors that make a city decide that it wants a convention probably are not going to go away. And I think those are probably pretty strongly there politically as far as the anti-corporate message, whether that becomes an agenda item for either of the parties is a different question that might have an effect. I mean, if a political party comes into town with an anti-corporate message, that may be different than protesters.
Well, Thomas Ginsburg, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thomas Ginsburg is a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll meet two protest organizers in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.